Compassion is the heart of Buddhist training, in the sense it's considered the gateway in, until you're willing to kind of connect with both with what you're experiencing, particularly your own suffering, and the suffering of people around you. You actually can't practice. What are you practicing? What are you actually doing if you are not in touch with basically what you're feeling and what's happening around you? So compassion is often felt the gateway into Buddhist practice. And just like in Japan, usually if it's a meditation hall for lay people, the main statue will always be an Avalokiteshvara, not a Buddha. You know, because it's considered that's what the first step in the Buddha. You know, there's a saying from the Buddha that Buddhist training begins with compassion for oneself. And until you find compassion and can embrace it. And we all know, you know, it's not like any of us are separate from compassion, because we've all know what it feels like to be deeply moved by the pain and suffering of others. We've all experienced that. And you know, that's just part of human experience. But the trick, what we're trying to do in Buddhism, is realize to experience it with the wisdom of Avalokiteshvara that allows ourselves to really open ourselves to the suffering that's there. Because in a way, we know on a deeper level, we're trusting that there's something much deeper than the suffering. The heart of Avalokiteshvara isn't being touched by the suffering. It's almost like you can be in pain and be fine, because you realize the pain isn't really, your body hurts, but you don't hurt. And that's one of the things we're trying to do in Buddhist training, is get in touch with what's much deeper than just this, the suffering. Because the flip side is, the reason we're often not that compassionate is that actually we find it intolerable to feel the suffering. That's often why we're not compassionate toward ourselves, because we don't want to feel what we're feeling. And we don't want to feel what other people are feeling. Hell no. You know, even like the expressions, I remember listening to somebody had done some crime, and people are talking about compassion for the person. The person says, I can't waste my compassion on, you know, this person. Almost like you have like 14 ounces of compassion, and you have to figure out the best way to use it, rather than actually realizing when we get out of the way, everything is embraced by compassion. You know, and Avalokiteshvara is everywhere. And an example of, you know, it's our self-absorption and the way we get caught up with what we're feeling and what we want, our desires, that closes our heart to us. So just think of when you're not open to what somebody else is going through. It's often because you're just caught up with what you're going through. It's like, so you don't feel, you know, you're not open to what's going on. And sometimes and a lot of Buddhist training is, how do we learn to be open and learn to be, like the hymn says, to be unmoved by it. You know, part of us moves, but part of us doesn't move. You know, and that's the point of training. It's like, yes, something sweeps through us, but we can still feel it's fundamentally okay, even though it's suffering. And a lot of it is just being open to feeling that connection. And a lot of times we get away with, I was looking at something and remembering something I'd read, which is like, it was very popular at least a few years ago, both the talks and the book by Jill Bolt Taylor, where she talked about, she was a brain researcher on the, you know, on how the brain worked, and suddenly she had a massive stroke in her brain. And she writes this account of dealing, both realizing, God, she's having this stroke, and then realizing. But one of the things that it did is, to her amazement, is it separated her separation from everything, and she felt this joy and peace that she had never, you know, experienced before. And she still had to go through, actually, a number, it took her years to function well again, which she eventually did enough to be able to write the book and give talks and do the rest of it.
She gave a TED talk, didn't she?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a famous TED talk.
Yeah, it was very...
13 million hits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it just points out how, you know, it can really have an impact, but it was pointing out in a way that it's the way we get trapped in ourself, and the brain actually does this. You know, it's part of the functioning of our brain is to be self-absorbed, but it also cuts ourselves off from something deeper. And a lot of training isn't, you know, we don't want a stroke. It's not, usually doesn't help. But on the other hand, we can learn to open ourselves to that truth that she had without. You don't have to have a stroke or do something weird, just like you don't have to. People will sometimes have a breakthrough when they suffer intensely. We're trying to do it and skip the suffering intensely part. You know, I mean, it's nice if, you know, because actually, frequently you won't get the spiritual, you know, just like you'll have the stroke and just be miserable. You'll have the intense suffering and actually not have a breakthrough. In fact, one of the reasons to train is it'll really help you when you do have that. Something turns bad, if you have really set some of the preparation, it'll help. And a lot of, you know, just like I remember hearing there's a neurological condition, and they can see it on a brain scan, in which you feel intensely what other people are feeling. You know, when you're around somebody, your brain mirrors whatever they're going through. And we all do that to a slight extent, and to some extent, and that's why we do react. You know, somebody, something is happening to somebody, and you have some reciprocal feeling of it. But there's people who it's almost like it's happening to them. And that's actually not a good thing. It makes it very hard to function. But one of the things we're trying to do in training is be willing to be open to feeling what others are feeling, and feeling what we're feeling. But the reason we can do it is we realize we're learning to sit still, meditate with it, and realize we don't have to get caught up in it, and just see it, just realize it's just a feeling coming through us, a condition passing through us, and it's not a problem. You know, in the deeper sense, it can be a practical problem, just like, you know, I've commented, I use this recently. You know, my back really bothered me a couple of weeks ago when, you know, just like a week ago, a little over a week ago. And I was thinking, God, I really hate this. You know, and I kind of had to just realize I have to let go of thinking I'm going to get some of this stuff done, because I wasn't. And I had to kind of realize and just let stuff go and realize there's pain, and then realize with gratitude that actually when I don't move, there's no pain. I just have to not move. And when I move, it's gonna, I have to realize, it hurts. And not a big deal. It's no, you know, it wasn't anything awful. It was just, it hurts. And just accept it and realize it's fine. It's the way it is, and I'm grateful it's not there, but, you know, because I'm too aware of people who get something like that and a year later they still are dealing with it, and it's not, doesn't respond. But the same, it's one of the most basic questions in humanity is, how do we respond to suffering? You can read people asking the Buddha this very question. How do we deal with suffering? And it's a common one that brings people to a Buddhist temple, is how do I deal with suffering? And, you know, and it's very important, because suffering is wrapped into the very fabric of our lives. aspects of the world lives, because often we're not getting, it's the nature of things. Often things aren't working out. You know, no matter what the conditions are, they often aren't what you want them to be. Our body doesn't work right. Someone else and other and people we love aren't getting what they want. You know, it's like they love somebody who doesn't love them, and you kind of go, how do you not have that happen? You know what I mean? What world can you have it that everyone loves each other equally? You know, everything is in perfect balance. And you realize there's no way to do that. It's the nature of things that, wow, I want to be with this person, but they don't want to be with me. You know, and that's, you know, that's the one classic form of suffering, or everybody can't get the job. Everyone can't be the same success. You know, it's like somebody at the Academy Awards will say, everyone should believe in their dreams. Look at me. And I think, there's 10,000 waiters in New York. And L.A. How many of them are going to stand there holding a golden statue? You know, I mean, it's like, yes, due to conditions, some of you will be successful, but, you know, due to conditions, a lot of you won't be, and it's successful, and there's no way. You know, and how do we get a heart that's free from this grasping, demanding things the way that we want it, that then creates ill will, anger, grief, despair. And, you know, and it's, you know, and a lot of training is how do we do this? You know, it's a whole process, and it's not like there's one thing that does it, because in a way, to find compassion, it's built, that compassion heart isn't like, oh, there's this one thing called compassion. It's coming out of practicing generosity, practicing virtue, practicing renunciation, practicing wisdom, patience, determination, equanimity. Because when you don't have any of those things, the compassion actually won't fully be there. You know, because you don't have it just like, oh, I can be compassionate, but let's say, but not have equanimity. Well, what's lack of equanimity means? It means you're getting caught up in something. And sometimes it'll be good caught up, but actually you don't control that. With equanimity, you're learning, I can just treat, not get caught up in these conditions, because the opposite will arise, you know. I get caught up with what I want, and then what happens when I get what I don't want? Or just caught up with just willingness to be generous. Think of being compassionate and not being generous. How does that work? You need a generous heart. It's an aspect of compassion just to want to help. I want to be compassionate, but I don't want to give anything. You know, it doesn't work that way. You have to be willing to, you know, it's all part of the same fabric. We use different words and different aspects, but it's all one life and one how you relate. Just think of relating to someone. To relate them, all those things have to be there. And when they're lacking, it'll cause problems in all the other areas. You know, don't be completely honest. Okay. How's that going to work with equanimity? How's that going to, you know, when they find out that you haven't been honest? And part of finding the heart of Avalokiteshvara is we're not getting so caught up in what we feel. People often will talk about how much compassion they feel. Actually, don't worry about what you feel. Worry about how you behave. Because I don't control how I feel, and often I don't. Part of me doesn't want to be compassionate, or I don't feel compassion. I don't want to put up with this. I don't want this. And the training is, okay, so what? Do it anyway, you know. And often then the compassion arises because when you get yourself out of the way, the compassion is there. It's like the ground of our being, is that part of us does care about everything when we're not being self-absorbed. But the self-absorbed comes up and I kind of go, oh, do I have to deal with this person now? And you let go of it and you deal with it. And often it's fine. You know what I mean? You realize that was just the self complaining. And it's like the self complains about a lot of things or wants a lot of stuff. And it's not like there's a problem. Sometimes it's good stuff. You know, and you look at it and go, oh, I probably should bother with that person now. That's, you know, this is not a... But you're trying to act from what it is. Because you can't make your... Training isn't making yourself feel compassion. Training is behaving compassionately. You know, and it's very clear, you know, distinction. You know, I don't care. You know, somebody, you know... Just like somebody can tell me how wonderful training is and how much they want to do it. And I don't care how much they want to do it. What matters is how much do they do. Because, you know, somebody can express this deep wanting to do it and then I don't see them for 3 years. And it wasn't like they were practicing somewhere else.
Balance like that too. You don't have to have gratitude to bow, but it gives birth to it.
Yeah, and sometimes a good example of that is, and it's worked for me, is I'll be upset or angry with something and I've had it. I'm going to bow till I stop being, until I can let go of being this upset. And it usually works. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, if you sincerely try to bow, like, try to make an offering and try to let go of something and you keep doing it, at some point, you know, part of you realizes, okay, let it go. And it, you know, nothing always works, so don't any of you leave here thinking the solution to everything is to bow till it goes away.
How many bows is that?
Well, 3 weeks later.
Like Hail Marys, how many...
Well, it's even like there's practices where you, I remember hearing to see the kind of the most important Korean Buddhist master, the if you want to see him, they had you bow for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Wow. And then you get to talk to him. And you're too tired to say anything. But it's a way of it's a way of doing things. I think probably it's a little dark in here. But a lot of training is and compassion actually just points us though to how of kind of just the desire that's in us to deal with the suffering. The same way as when my back hurts, I do want to deal with it. It's like I don't have to think, Kinra, you want to deal with your hurt back and do whatever you can to make it feel better. No, my back hurts. I really want it to feel better. And it's a heartfelt desire. And the more you get yourself out of the way and point yourself in that way, the more that wherever you see suffering, you would like to help. You know, or it's like, or a famous line of, Milarepa, who is one of the most important figures in Tibetan Buddhism. Just as I instinctively reach out to touch and heal a wound on my leg as part of my own body, so do I reach out and touch and try to heal the pain in another as part of this body. And you don't have to think about that. You know, if something hurts, you want to make it feel better. And when you get yourself not so self-absorbed. You see it somewhere else and you think, oh, what can I do? You know, how do I help this? You know, and part of training is opening ourselves to the pain and suffering there, which we can do because we have faith in something deeper than the pain and suffering. You know, or as the line I always like on the Chinese master Shen Yan, who titled his commentary on the scripture of great wisdom, "There is no suffering." You know, when we realize there's something deeper than the suffering. You know, because the suffering is, once it passes, it's like right now, the fact that my back hurt me has about as much reality as the enchilada I ate a week ago. You know, they're both like dreams right now and don't really matter greatly. You know, they're, just think of all the things you've gone through and, you know, it's like, now it's almost like they're dreams of suffering, they're dreams of other things. And of course, part of training is we're trying to awaken from not being lost in the dream of birth and death. Not that you're not being born and dying, but the importance you give it is the dreamlike aspect. You know, it's amazing how deeply insignificant we all are. You know? It's like we're really not important, you know. Something everyone, most other people in the world fully recognize. But for us, it's like we're in a Shakespearean drama. Like, am I going to get this? Am I not going to get this? This happened to me. Wow, they like me. They don't like me. And how charged it could be. Yeah. And a lot of it is trusting that we can help the suffering. You know, compassion, the very word means, is rooted in calm, to be with the passions. You know, compassion. And it's rooted in just the desire to be willing to feel the passions and to actually trust, you know, find what's deeper than the passions. You know, it's almost, and we can really look at ourselves the same way as we look at a child who's very upset, you know, because they have to go to bed, they don't get their favorite food. Hell, I remember having huge fights on who got a cherry on the cake. You know what I mean? It was like, and these were not little things. These had deep importance to, you know. So my poor mother, I remember her cutting cherries into thirds. Because there were three children. And then, of course, we would fight who got the bigger third. Because it's very hard to cut the cherry exactly into thirds. And you can look at this and realize, you know, we're just being children. Well, you're just being childish adults from a spiritual point of view. You know, it's like you haven't fully grown up and realized what really matters. You know, you will think that, oh, this matters or that matters. And you know, just like I was... You know, and... You know, and a lot of training is, can we let go of our resistance, our judgments, our fear, and how do we do that? And it takes a lot of work to, how do we fully embrace where we are now, which allows us to have compassion for whatever's going on now. And when we're trying not to be here now, be where we are, we're actually cutting ourselves off from that heart of compassion. because the compassion can only be found by being fully present with what's there, not dreaming of something else or wanting to be somewhere else or thinking there's a problem with where we are. Mm-hmm. This is kind of, it's like somebody put it, you know, where you are right now is where the rubber meets the road. You know, this is the heart of it. You know, everything else you're dreaming of, but this is...
Well, the first line, preserve well for you now have. This is all.
Yeah, that's, for those who don't know, that's one of our morning service scriptures. And, you know, and that's what you're trying to trust in, so you can let go of... And just being willing to, you know, doing the hard practice of having compassion for those who are making mistakes, causing harm, you know, is part of the practice. Because otherwise we're, you know, not kind of embracing things, you know, that'll actually free us. We can't have ill will towards those who are making mistakes and expect to really do well spiritually. Because the trouble is, one of the problems, if you have ill will to those who are making mistakes, what do you do when you realize you're the one? You know, just like, it's always sobering to me when I'm upset with somebody and after talking to them I find out they didn't make the mistake, I made the mistake. You know, and it's like, you know, it's like a, you know, you feel like your guts are being knocked around a little bit because, you know, you were being judgmental of them and suddenly it's on you. You know, and the Buddha said, you can search the whole world and not find anyone more deserving your love and compassion than yourself. Now that sounds like a fairly self-centered point of view. From a Buddhist point of view, we're all the same. You know, it's like, wow, that person deserves it more because they're good or they're suffering or... You know, the compassion embraces everything equally. It's not like... You know, so... The line wouldn't work as well if you said, you can search the whole world and find no one who deserves your compassion less than you. But, of course, it's the same thing. And the mountain, and it's important to realize, the mountain of suffering, where people often look at the world and see all the suffering, and they can be overwhelmed by it, just like you look at the news and have horrible, just horrible stuff. I was just yesterday reading an account of, you know, of a, you know, of injustice that makes you feel, you know, can create the self-righteous and upset, how can people let this happen and all the rest. And but the amount of suffering in the world can't actually ever go down if you're going to add your own bitterness, anger and ill will towards it, just by saying, well, if it's justified in this case. Actually, it's not. It's not an unsurprising reaction to be upset with somebody who's making someone else suffer, but actually, you're just making it worse because that easily turns into, you know, which often happens, wow, we want them to get their comeuppance. We want them to suffer. And if you think you never do this, what do you do when you're angry with somebody? That's exactly what you're doing. You're adding to the suffering in the world by, you know, and you can say, and somebody I remember telling me, well, I don't get angry. I say, you don't get irritated? You know, it's a minor form of it, but, you know, you get irritated, impatient, and all those things, and they still cause people to suffer. Anyway, any comments as I'm talking on here?
Reverend Master, that you were telling about what the Buddha said about having compassion for ourselves more than... How did you put that quite... You look in the whole world and the one that needs compassion the most is yourself?
No.
No. Oh, I
got it wrong.
I got it
Whatever
wrong.
Whatever you're doing, be aware... Okay, that's the wrong quote. Where is the Buddha quote? Buddha once said, you can search the whole world and you will not find anyone more deserving of your love and compassion than yourself.
I said it differently somehow. Okay. That reminds me of that story. Are you familiar with the story that in the Pali Canon of the... there's some king and his wife having a conversation, and I think the punchline is the same thing. I think the king is trying to get the wife to say, do you love me the most? And she basically says, no, I love myself the most. And they have this argument, and then they go to the Buddha to resolve it. Do you remember that story? No. Okay. Anyways, I think it was the same.
Well, if you say you love yourself the most, that's delusion.
Okay, so I am missing something, because I thought that's...
No.
Can you read that one more time?
The Buddha said that you can search the whole world and not find anyone more deserving of your love and compassion than yourself.
So I am. I'm missing something.
It's not saying you're the most or anymore. Everyone may deserve. You're not saying... There's nothing in that's saying that you deserve your love and compassion more than anyone else does. It just says no one who deserves it more than you. But no one deserves it less than you.
Right, of course, yeah.
So if you say you love yourself the most, that's not what he said.
Okay.
He's just saying you can't find anyone who deserves it more than you. There's a big, major distinction between saying that... You know that no one deserves compassion more than Joe Bloggs, but there's nothing special about Joe Bloggs. He's just, everybody is in that place. Everybody deserves the same love and compassion.
And I think there's also something about, we do have to have compassion for ourselves before we can have compassion for others, or you start with yourself.
Well, if you can't have if you're judging and hard on yourself, it's going to be very hard to be
compassionate to others.
You're going to, wow, I don't mind these faults in me, but I'm upset with myself making this mistake, but I'm fine with someone else making
right.
it. You won't be, you won't do that. So usually if you see... In a way, the two go together. You can't have one fully without the other. You can't let go of the judgments of yourself and judge others, or let go of the judgments of others and judge yourself, if you have to do them together, because there really isn't a fundamental difference between our mistakes and others' mistakes. They're just mistakes. And if you view them differently, it won't work. Now, you have more responsibility for your mistakes because you can do something about it, but that doesn't change the compassion for the mistakes, and how you view them. It just means, at this point, it's kind of clear that, yes, if I'm opinionated, I can do something about my opinionation. But on the other hand, if I'm going to be upset with my opinionation, I'm going to be upset with it wherever I see it. But I can help my opinionation more than somebody else can, because I can, make you less opinionated. All I can do is have compassion for the fact that you're opinionated. Mm-hmm. And I can have compassion for my opinionation and realize, okay, this is just a human condition that I have to work on. And part of Buddha allowing us compassion, just to realize whatever the problem is, it's just something to work on. And it's even why it's kind of reassuring sometimes to see, just like I've mentioned it before, the documentary of people who were in a maximum security prison, and in the south, and they did one of these 9-day Vipassana retreats in which you meditate more or less the whole day for 9 days. And it was amazing. A lot of them, for the first time, took responsibility for what they did and felt a real change in their hearts. And part of it was that for the first time, they really were willing to fully look at what they did. And then they actually could find compassion for what they did. But until they were willing to look at it, you can't find compassion. And then they would probably find compassion for what other people did too, because it's the same thing. You know, so training does begin with compassion for oneself. You know, and you know, we have to trust that. You know, one of the main images they use always of Avalokiteshvara is the waters of compassion. And actually, the reason water is a great thing is that in the end, no matter how solid you think the problem is, the suffering is, the difficulty is, if you're actually willing to sit still with it and just not make a problem out of it, it will wash away. There's really nothing there. Everything washes away. You know, really, everything will wash away. There's nothing solid ever. You know, everything is impermanent, changeable. You know, think of all the mistakes we made. They're all going to wash away. In fact, in a very short time, not a single sentient being will have any memory of anything we've ever done. You know, it'll all be like a dream. You know, that nobody even dreams anymore.